I'll read the text for you. You need not turn to it. It's found in Job 29, verse 2. Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me. I want all the children now to take your Bibles and close them and just look at Brother Hiles. I don't like for the children to write or be using the pages. You look at Brother Hiles because I want you to listen without writing. So close your Bibles, children, on the front, if you would, and put your pencils and everything out of your hands, because if you're like I am, you ever doodle? You ever doodle? I can't think if I'm not doodling. And children, a lot of that way, it's hard to think unless you're doing like that. And Job said, oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me. Now, here's a man, as you know, in dire circumstances. Here's a fellow who had 10 children, and every one was killed in one tragic calamity. Think of it. Here's a man who not only had lost his children, but he had lost every dime of his fortune. He had lost thousands of camels, donkeys, sheep, cattle, lost it all. Here was a man who was the richest man in the East, and now he's the poorest man in the East. Think of it. 10 children, gone like that. All of his riches, gone, just like that. Here's a man who not only had lost his children and his riches, but he had lost his health. Too sick to work. The awful disease of elephantiasis, a form of leprosy, causing corrupt sores to break out all over his body. Those sores are running. He wipes them with public rags off the city street. Not only is his health gone, are his children gone, is his fortune gone, but his wife has suggested that he curse God and die. That isn't all. His friends have forsaken him. That isn't all. He is in such pain physically that he gets him a medal, a piece of metal, and scrapes the corruption off his sores. Did something ever hurt so bad you had to scratch it, made it feel better when you scratched it? But that isn't all. He goes out to the city garbage dump where the ashes are still hot, the coals are still hot, and sits down in the hot coals and ashes of the city garbage dump. Wife gone, friends gone, children gone, health gone, wealth gone. But there's something maybe you didn't know about Job. His social standing was also gone. Job had been a judge. Judge Job. He was the big judge of his city. I mean, the circuit court or something. City judge, county judge. He was the judge. He was a fellow who was no doubt trained as an attorney and had become the judge of the city. Now here he is, Judge Job, sitting out in the city dump. I've seen some judges I'd like to see in the city dump. 9 of them are in Washington. Oh, that sorry decision about busing. Boy, that ought to make the angels weep and every American tremble. But anyway, Judge Job out in the city dump. And Job begins to think. Memories flood his soul. The 29th chapter of Job is nothing but Job remembering the old life, what he used to be like. Now follow me, I'll tell you what he thought. Job is thinking out loud. He's thinking about what he used to be. And he said, oh, that I could have what I had in months past. Now what that really means in months past, it means in months of old. It means long time ago. He's saying, if I just could have what I had a long time ago. But it hasn't been very long. It just seems like a long time. Did you know when you leave the blessings of God, it always seems like a long time? Job said, months pass, or in months of old. Little children, you know, looked to us and one teenager came in and asked my advice a year or so ago and said, Pastor, could I have your advice? And so I said, yes, you may. And after I'm laughing because I'm going to tell something about the Andersons just a minute. They don't know, but this is funny. Somebody here is scared. I won't tell who said it, but I'm not. So you don't have to worry. But the teenager came, got my advice, and as I left, teenager said, "Thank you, Brother Hiles. I just wanted advice of an elderly person." And I said, "Why don't you go get it then?" A younger person said the other day, they said something about the Andersons, and I said, "Which Anderson?" And they said, "The elderly Andersons." You're not old, really, you're not. You're just kids. But at least you are, Ms. Anderson. You got an old husband. But now they think, they look at us. Listen, do you recall when you were 15 how old a fellow 25 was? Huh? You know that people 15 and 16 and 17 years old think a fellow my age ought to be put out to pasture? Sometimes it does sound sort of good. Like the fellow interviewing these old men, asking them why they live so long. He said, one fellow said, how'd you live so long? He said, I lived to be 100. He said, I did it because I lived right. Ate health food and didn't drink anything that was contaminating. Lived a clean life. That's how I lived to be so old. He had the microphone to another fellow, said, how did you live to be so old? Well, he said, I did what I did. He said, I exercised. I did push-ups and jog, and that's the way I lived to be so old. Went to the next fellow and said, hey, how'd you live to be so long? Well, he's so old. He said, well, I didn't tell you what I did. He said, I just ran around, drank all the liquor. It was wine, women, and song. Lived it up. Went to all the taverns and night spots and all the wild women. And said, is that the way you got to be this age? Yep, that's the way I got to be this age. He said, how old are you? He said, 25. Now, Job, you liked that, didn't you? You liked that. Job, to Job, it seemed like a long time. Let me ask you a question. You ask your 6 or 7 year old child how long it's been since Christmas. It's been years. You ask me, it's been hours. Job said, it seems like forever. In months past, the olden days, he said. It's always that way when you go into sin. Always is. Seems like it's been forever, Job said, since I knew the sweetness in the presence of God. That's in verse 2. In verse 3, he said, by the way, he goes on then and lists the things he did in the old days. And in verse 3, he said, when his candle shined upon my head. In the eastern countries, they did, and still do in some cases, talked about the blessings of God as a lighted candle. In other words, if a person was blessed of God, God's candle is lighted on me. But if a person was not blessed of God, was away from God, or backslidden, it was his candle has gone out. You see, his candle has gone out. And so Job was saying, when his candle shined upon my head. In verse 4 he said, as I was in the days of my youth. And the word youth there means autumn. As I was in the days of my autumn. In the days of my early maturity. In the days when I was a young adult. He said, if I recall those days. And then he said in verse 6, when I washed my steps with butter. Did you wonder what that meant when you came to that a while ago? Job said, I washed my steps with butter. Did you ever wash your feet with butter? What that means? He said, I walked in true fatness. That's what he means. Butter and fatness was a symbol of the great blessings of God. Lived on the fat of the land. You ever read that in the Bible? Lived on the fat of the land. Job said, when you wash my steps. He said, not only did I walk in the fatness of the land, my steps were washed in butter. Ah, he said, I recall those days. I recall those days. I've seen better days, he said. And he goes on in verse 7 to say, when I went to the gate through the city streets. When I went to the gate through the city streets. Now, he's talking about there as the judge of the city. Just outside the city was the gate where the judge would sit on a throne-like thing. A big seat. And Job said, as I'd walk through the streets of the city, and people follow me, I, the judge, here I set the ash heap. Family gone, wife gone, riches gone, health gone, social standing gone. But he said, I remember. Now, I recall when I was a judge of this town. Folks don't remember that much anymore. But I was a judge of this town. And Job said, I remember as I walked down the street and people lined the street that the judge went to take his place. And then in verse 8 it says, the young men hid themselves. The young men hid themselves. Now what it meant was this. Young men that had been in the streets playing, they ran to the sides. And listen, the judge is coming through. Suppose that you were out in the street playing, young people, and suddenly the governor's car came through. And here came the motorcycles and the sirens blowing and so forth. And I don't have any sirens anymore, so I'm, I still like the old, but anyhow, sirens came and the motorcycles came, and he said, the governor's coming. And the little kids scurry toward the side of the street. The young men scurry over the side because the governor's coming down the street. And that's what Job said. Job said, I didn't used to be in the ash heap. I haven't always been like this. I remember, I've seen better days. I can recall when little children and young people would scurry to the side of the street because the judge is walking down the street toward the gate where he would sit. In verse 8, he also says, and the aged people rose. He was a judge. That's where the custom started, about rising when the judge comes in. You've been to the courtrooms, I'm sure, as I have, not as a performer, only as a witness, and trying to help somebody. But I've been to the courtroom. In walks the judge. What do? We all stand. His honor walks in. And Job said, I can recall when the young people scurried from the streets and let me come through and paid respect to me. And I can recall when the aged people rose because the judge is coming in. Verse 9, he says, princes, refrain talking. Princes refrain talking. He said, the judge, princes, I mean the prince would say, royalty would say, the judge is coming. Shh. Don't talk. And royalty wouldn't speak. Job said, that's what I used to be. That's what I was. Verse 10, he says, nobles held their peace. Nobles held their peace. In verses 11 through 25, Job said, the poor came to me, and I treated them properly. He said, widows came to me, and I treated them properly. He said, I was eyes to the blind, a father to the poor, ears to the deaf. Job said, I was fair in my judgment. I couldn't be bought off. I was no crooked judge. I didn't cater to the rich. I helped the blind, and I was their eyes. I helped the deaf. I was their ears. I helped the poor. I was their father. I was an honest judge. I was a respected judge. Nobles hushed when I walked in. Princes, when I walked in. Children said, that's the judge. When I walked down the street toward my place, he said words like these, after my words, they spake not again. I like that. Job said, after my words, they spake not again. There are two people coming in. One is suing the other, and they're arguing and arguing and fussing. And Job said, when I sat as the judge of the city, when I spake my words, they didn't argue anymore. I was the last word. What I said, they accepted. Everybody knew that I was an honest judge. Everybody knew I was a fair judge. Not only was I rich, not only was I a mighty man, not only was I the best Christian on earth, but I was a judge, and I was a leading judge, and I was above nobles, I was above princes, and I was respected, and I was honored. I sit out here in the city dump. I've seen better days. I like one statement he made in those verses. He said, they waited for me as for the rain. They waited for me as for the rain, he said. Job is saying these things. And by the way, when you go home tonight, it'll take you, when we said a while ago, Brother Colson said, we're going to read the entire chapter. I saw some people go, took us 2.5 minutes. 2.5 minutes to read the entire chapter. You'd be surprised. I can read, many times I do, read the entire book of Proverbs in just a matter of a couple hours. Many times I do. In fact, I can read the book of Proverbs in an hour's time if I don't read it as carefully as I want to. And there are many days when I read all the Psalms and all the Proverbs in one day. Many days. It doesn't take time for the Bible. Now, when you go home tonight, or sometime this week, read the entire 29th chapter. I may have said 25th. 25 verses of the 29th chapter of Job, and realize, when you read it, Job is in the ash heap, family gone, wife gone, riches gone, health gone, everything gone, sitting in the ash heap, a wretched, miserable man who says, I've seen better days, and then picture Job as he remembered in his mind back yonder as a judge walking with his long robes down through the street to take the place in the city gate and to judge fairly. And everybody said, there may be some crooked judges, but there's a good judge, and I've seen better days. Job was saying, I've seen better days financially. He was saying, I've seen better days physically. He's saying, I've seen better days socially. But mainly he was saying, and he starts here, I've seen better days spiritually. He starts there. Interesting, he didn't say, I've seen the days that restored to me, that the old days, the old months, when I was a judge. Doesn't start there. He says, the days when God used to preserve me. Job said the biggest thing is the spiritual thing, and I've seen better days spiritually. Now listen, 'tis bad to lose financially, but I've known people who've lost everything financially who did not lose their joy, happiness, or peace. I'm thinking about a man that I knew in Texas who was a wealthy man, lost everything he had. Everything he had! And yet, he's one of the finest Christians and happiest fellows I know. 'Tis bad to lose physically, yet I know a lot of people who've lost physically and seen better days physically who are still happy. I know people who have cancer who are happier after they got the cancer because they learned to walk with God than they were before. I've known people, who was it that said, somebody said this, and I forget, some famous man said, the healthiest people are those who have an illness in their youth, a lingering illness in their youth. The healthiest people are those who have a lingering illness. You know why? My mother almost died 100 years ago. Little stinker. You know what? She had a serious problem many years ago. Now, what did that problem do? Made her take care of herself. Made her eat right. Made her watch her diet. Made her be careful how she takes good care of her body. And so, many times, it is a blessing to have an illness in your youth that makes you have enough sense to take care of your body. God, would God we had enough sense to take care of our bodies before we have an illness. But I've known a lot of people who were sickly and terribly sick, who were happy. 'Tis not to sacrifice happiness to sacrifice all your money. 'Tis not to sacrifice happiness to sacrifice all of your health. 'Tis not to sacrifice happiness to sacrifice your social standing. I've known people whose names were wrecked socially who still were happy and had joy because they knew they were right. Once we have tasted spiritual flavor, and once we have known the fellowship and the sweet closeness of walking with God, one looks back to better days spiritually, he'll never be happy till he gets back. Mark it down. You can lose all your money and still be happy. I lost all mine. Lost a quarter one time. You can lose all your money and still be happy. You can lose your health and still be happy. You can lose your social standing and still be happy, but you can't lose your closeness to God and still be happy. And so no wonder Job started off by saying, God preserve me. But here's a sad thing about Job. Did you know Job, in the 29th chapter of Job, is not only physically and materially bankrupt, but did you know Job is backslidden? Yeah, backslidden. Now I want you to notice, here's the message. Listen carefully. I want us to follow tonight the decline of Job. Not his decline of losing his money, his health. I want you to follow his spiritual decline. Listen now. His spiritual decline, so we can see what caused him. The best Christian on earth. And I think the best man on earth. When the Bible said he was upright in all his ways, perfect in all his ways, did you know he was talking about his judging? He was a judge that was upright and honest in all the judgments he made. When he sat on the bench, when I was a kid, played ball, I always sat on the bench too. But when he sat on the bench, he was always honest. He was upright. He was a fair judge. But he backslid. Now listen carefully. I'm going to give you four steps, and I'll help you if you'll listen. One, Job trusted in a situation rather than in close fellowship with God. First Baptist Church, hear me right now. Members of this church, hear me now. Job had it made. Job had he had children who loved to pray with him. He had a family. He offered sacrifices and had an altar. Job had a setup where he could do no wrong, you might say. He had a situation, a perfect situation. If Job had lived in 1971, he would have had this kind of situation. He would have had a Christian family. He would have had a fine church. He would have seen many people saved every Sunday. He would have had a high school for his young folks to attend and a college later on. He would have had a situation that was utopian for spiritual growth. But did you know the better the situation gets, the more easy it is for you to depend upon the situation and not your personal fellowship with God? Now you listen to me. This church is a great church, but she'll never be so great she'll take the place of your walking with God. Our school is wonderful, but our school will never take the place of your walking with your God. You know, oftentimes people have to leave a church like this and go to the army to find out how good Christians they can become. You know, sometimes students go off, young people go off to college, and after they find out what they had at First Baptist Church, then they have to depend on the Lord. How many times have I heard somebody say, I got out on my own, I had to depend on God, and I became a strong Christian. Now, the truth is, you don't have to do that. You can become a strong Christian here and depend on God and enjoy the security and blessings of First Baptist Church of Hammond. Let me give you a few ideas. Teenagers, First Baptist Church, listen carefully. It would be easy for you to trust a situation rather than the ever-presence of Christ. Come to Sunday school on Sunday morning. You come to preaching and see sometimes 100, 150, 200 folks converted kneeling across these altars in this baptistry of water trouble this morning. You saw all those adults and many men baptized, and you come back tonight and go to youth activities and go to a prayer meeting and sing in the groups and sing in the youth choir and go to the high school. Before you know it, you will get to depending upon a situation for your spiritual strength, and you will backslide if you do. Sunday school teachers in our Sunday school, did you know you can do the same thing? When could you go into sin? You don't have time. When could you drink any liquor? You're too busy. You haven't got time to drink your coffee at home. Thank God. You're too busy. You go to a teacher's meeting, midweek service, Sunday morning Sunday school, visitation, soul winning, a bus route. You've got a perfect situation. I don't care what your situation is. Christianity is basically, first and foremost, the God of heaven fellowshipping with his creatures. That's what it's all about. That's what God made you for. God made you to fellowship with himself. And if you bypass that fellowship, I don't care what church you attend, I don't care what school you attend, I don't care if you're in the fastest growing church in the biggest Sunday school in America, I don't care what kind of an organization we have, we can have colleges and high schools and elementary schools and junior high schools and senior citizens departments and all the rest of it, juvenile homes and orphanages and all the rest of it. But our church will never rise any stronger than it's our personal, individual fellowship with the God who made us and gave himself that we might be saved. Spend time with God. A young man came to me out in Los Angeles last week when I finished preaching, and he walked up and he said, how do you do it? And I said, what do you mean? He said, how do you do it? And I said, I don't know what you mean. He said, how do you get all you, done you do and still be a halfway good Christian? I said, young man, if I had one word to say to young preachers and young men across this country, I've said it up and down the length and breadth of this country, I've said, this is my advice in three words. The great secret of the Christian life is walk with God. Walk with God. Walk with God. Walk with God. No amount of high school teachers, for example, no amount of teaching high school, graduating from Bob Jones or Tennessee Temple or teaching in a Christian high school, no amount of that will take the place of your walking with your God. Staff members, no amount of working on the buses or the youth program or the visitation program or the rescue mission, no amount of the organization, no amount of the Sunday school, no amount of all we do, the choir, the music program, none of it will take the place of your fellowship with your God. Job trusted a situation. Did you know this? You're not a good Christian because of your position. You have your position because you were a good Christian. And if you're no longer a good Christian, you're an imposter in that position. You say, he's a deacon, he's a good Christian. No, he's not a good Christian because he's a deacon. He's a deacon because we thought he was a good Christian. I want to say this. As a pastor, staff member, Sunday school teacher, a deacon, or any other leader of this church, not to walk with God is just as much to fail to meet the qualifications as it would be to go out and get drunk. Every member of this church must spend our time with God. And the greater the church, the more the temptation to trust the situation instead of fellowship with the Savior. Now, this kind of preaching is not very spectacular. It's not quite as hard and as spectacular as knocking the communist in the head. But I'll tell you, the communists are not being knocked in the head because we need some Christians who walk with God. Our country is going to pot because Christian people don't know God. Preachers, by the dozens, don't even know God. I've prayed for these 12 years. I've been your pastor, and you don't know how many times I've stood at this door right over here when the building was empty and walked in and had a seat right here and gotten on my knees in this pulpit hundreds of times in these years. And I have said, oh, my God, let me every Sunday, when I make the walk toward this sacred desk, let my people know I've been with God. That's my need, and that's your need, and that's your need. Job trusted a situation. On trusting that situation, be faithful to all the meetings, all the practices, all the church functions, and before you know it, you won't be worth the powder it'd take to blow you up spiritually because you trusted in an organization, in a situation, when you had better realize that all of these things are only aids to make you spend more time with your God. How much time did you spend with God this week? Huh? How much time did you spend with God this week? There you left your room this morning. Did you think to pray in the name of Christ our Savior? Did you super loving favor as a strength today? Oh, how praying rest the weary prayer can change the night today. So when life seems dark and dreary, don't forget to pray. But there's more than that. When life seems bright and cheery, don't forget to pray, and it won't get dark and dreary. Walk with God. 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 Job had learned that blessed truth and had not trusted a situation. Job would never have known the lonely hours he spent with spiritual bankruptcy. There's something else that Job did. And I want you to listen very carefully because you won't get this unless you listen carefully. The statement is not very profound, but I think what I'm going to say will be. Job looked to man and not to God. And I want to give you two ways in which he did it. In the first place, Job compared himself to man. Now, some of this, not these thoughts, but I have something along this line, a chapter in one of the chapters of Strength and Duty, my newest book. But not this, exactly. Job compared himself to man and not with God. Job is the best Christian on earth. Now, wait a minute. I'm going to make a statement here I want you to hear. You could be the best Christian in this building tonight and still be backslidden. Yeah. You could be the best Christian in this building. And that's exactly what happened to Job. I believe that Job was the best Christian on earth and yet was backslidden. And Job said, I'm the best Christian on earth. Look, the stature, I have stood the test. Job was backslidden. I mean away from God. I mean God lost his presence. And yet he was the best Christian on earth. I say it again. You can be the best Christian in this building and still be the most backslidden in this building. For backsliding is having known better days than you know tonight. Here's a person rises,
spiritually to the top. I don't mean as in an office or having pastor, title of pastor or deacon or assistant pastor. I mean as far as his fellowship with God is concerned and his obedience to Christ is concerned. He grows and grows and grows and becomes the greatest Christian. Here he is up here. And here's the second greatest Christian here. The fellow backslides. And yet he's still better than the one above him. Job made the mistake of seeing how far up he had come instead of how far down he still was. Job made the mistake of measuring from whence I came instead of where I have to go. Job made the mistake of measuring himself with those human beings on earth instead of measuring himself with the glory of God. When Job did that, he found himself backslidden. And I want to say this about him, as far as his looking to man, not to God. When that happened, listen. When he backslid, the next thing, he thought others had changed. He thought others had changed. Always is the case. All kinds of backsliders come to me. And I've seen all kinds of backsliders. In fact, we have five different kinds here sitting on the platform tonight. But very, very many, very few things they have in common. Here's a fellow living in some kind of lust or sexual sin. Here's a fellow who's out yonder in the world hobnobbing with the wrong crowd. Here's a fellow laying out of church. Here's a fellow who robs God. Here's a fellow that drifts away from God. Here's a fellow who begins to steal. Here's a fellow who begins to lie. Now, wait a minute. There's one thing they all have in common. And that is, everybody's changed but them. It's always been the fact. Say, you wonder whether you're backslidden or not? Let me tell you one good test, right quickly. And I say this, and I say it honestly. One good test is what you think about this church. Now, hold it. I don't think you think it's perfect. But I mean, brother, if your general attitude toward a church that has averaged over 200 converts a Sunday in the last few months is not good, there's something wrong with your spiritual thermometer. Don't misunderstand me. Somebody's going to leave here and say, well, Hiles said you don't like the church, you're not right with God. I didn't say that. But I'll tell you one thing. If your general attitude about this church is not positive, then I'll say there's something wrong with your spiritual life or mine too. Somebody says, the church has changed. The church has changed. Or Job would have said, the preacher's changed. Or the deacons have changed. Or the people have changed. Look, what is your attitude about people you used to love? Now listen to me very carefully. If I say, Brother Levy, you've changed. Brother John, you haven't. You haven't. Nobody else has. Nobody else out here has. Then I may have some grounds on which to stand. But if I say, Brother Levy's changed, Brother Colston has changed, Brother Fisk has changed, Brother Streeter's changed, Brother Fordway's changed, I bet you a quarter it's me that's changed. See, there I'm betting already. That proves it's me. See, you just backslide just like that. You saw me do it right in the pulpit. You see, as somebody used to say to Mr. Moody, said, you're rubbing the cat the wrong way. Rubbing the fur the wrong way. Mr. Moody said, have the cat turn around. The world's full of possum Christians. The whole world's upside down, but you're hanging with your tail. That's the only thing wrong. Possum Christians. A sure good sign of backsliding is this. How many people you used to think were okay have changed all of a sudden? Or you've changed your opinion about them all of a sudden? I'm not being critical. I'm trying to help you. Watch it carefully. When I get to the place where I think somebody's changed, or the church has changed, and good Christians have changed, and the deacons have changed, and the staff has changed, and my Sunday school teacher has changed, that probably I'm on my way. I'm looking to man and not to God. By the way, even if they have changed, you haven't got time to look at them. Busy trying to help people and be faithful to Christ. Let me give you some advice. This is good advice. Well, B.B., you travel a great deal. Travel some. Dr. Billings travels a great deal. And anybody that knows anything about me knows that I'm pretty. You know what I decided to do not long ago? I decided, kids on the front, I decided several years ago, Brother Levy, I was going to allow everybody to have a little leeway there to criticize me some before I got mad at them. For example, here's John Colston. Now, why a bum like that? Ever criticize me? I don't know, but I'm going to allow John and Lane some leeway. If they criticize me and I find out about it, I'm not going to cast them aside because they are human. And I'm human, and I have the same spirit. We all have the same spirit, don't we? All of us do. The truth is, if you don't like anybody, you don't like yourself because there's no temptation taking you, but this is common to man. All of us have the same weaknesses. So I decided years ago that I was going to give a fellow a leeway. And that if he criticized everybody here, if I hear that anybody in this building criticizes me, I'm not going to cast you off. You know why? Because I know you're human. I know we're all weak. Now, when you hear what I said about you, would you do the same thing? But now, what am I saying? I'm going to realize that all of us are weak. Job made the mistake of looking to man, not to God. I'll hasten quickly to say Job also made the sin of pride. I won't go into that. Time will not permit because I want to get to the next one a little bit. And that is one thing that happened to Job. He lost his momentum. You ever hear about a baseball team? They have their momentum going. The Cubs don't. And the White Sox never have. Well, last time the White Sox won a pennant, our softball team won a game that same year. The momentum going. Job lost his momentum. Job couldn't get going. He couldn't get, he lost the momentum. Listen, I said to my class tonight something, and this is true. Momentum is a very important thing in any walk of life, any area of life. And that's one reason why this country is in jeopardy tonight, because of the momentum that the hippie and the communist crowd has. You see, if President Nixon withdrew the entire Vietnam Army tonight, don't you kid yourself, we would not have seen the last of the marches on Washington. There is an listen, are you listening? There is an organizational setup that is not set up just to get our boys out of Vietnam. That's not their goal. That's only one little step in their big goal. You wait. You wait till Nixon brings all the boys back, and he will. He will. He brings all the boys back. And you'll see that same crowd asking for further demands. Because their goal is not a goal to save the boys in Vietnam. Their goal is a goal to destroy our way of life in America and bring revolution in our generation. And they've got the momentum. Now, here is where I could have saved the nation if you'd elected me president 8 years ago. Right here. Listen, I'll tell you how I done it. Been a lot better off to have dropped. Now, I'm not saying we should drop the atomic bomb, but we would have been better off had we done it. Then, we've given this crowd 8 or 10 years to organize. And we've given them an enemy, an emotional kind of an enemy that pulls at the heartstrings of our, bring our boys home! Our boys are dying on the battlefield! We'll throw our medals back! Okay, I heard it. By the way, I thought when he spoke, this fellow, a veteran, I thought when he spoke, if he's not the Antichrist, the devil's missing a good chance because that boy's suave. 27-year-old veteran. Walked down the street without a leg. Boy walks down the street without an arm. Another boy walks down the street. You died. Where did you give your leg or arm or face? I gave it in Vietnam. He said, proudly, because Vietnam was where the American people decided not to fight anymore. Don't you see what we've given them? We've given them an emotional heart appeal. They're not after closing the Vietnam War. They're after destroying America. And this happens to be the most popular subject they can agree with society on. Is up. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, when the last soldier comes home from Vietnam, this crowd will not disband. They'll just go on to the next victory and the next step in destroying America. I'm going to make a statement I've never made to this many people. It was the day when Martin Luther King Jr., he thought he was the savior of the Negro race. I'll get some criticism for this, but I couldn't care less. I got a preacher in Virginia that has dedicated his life to ruining me because of a statement I made about Martin Luther King. And it was just a little inoffensive statement that if he had laid down in front, on Michigan Avenue like he did in front of the traffic, and I'd been the next fellow driving down the street, I'd have saved that fellow Ray a lot of trouble down in Memphis. That's all I said. But Martin Luther King Jr. was the deliverer of the Moses of the Negro.
Huh?
Oh, no. That just happened to be the big dramatic issue that gave him a foothold. We found out before long when the Vietnam War came along, he was a pacifist. And then we found out he had attended a school for communists teaching folks how to destroy America. Yeah. And then we found out it was not just the race problem, it was the peace problem, it was the Vietnam problem, it was a pacifist problem, and that's exactly what all the rest of it. And that's why when the Supreme Court stands up and 9 men say, we're going to bust the kids, there's more to it than that, that's only one little battle in a big war of revolution, destruction of our way of life. Oh, would God we had enough sense to see it. They've got our people hoodwinked into believing that they were up there in Washington, D.C. yesterday just to fight the Vietnam War or bring the boys home. That same stinking crowd will be there when the Vietnam War's over trying to promote some other way to destroy our way of life. Didn't you see when those speakers finished, they gave the communist sign? When momentum is up. That's one reason why our church is going so good. Momentum is up. And Job lost his momentum. Job quit moving. Quit going forward. Job resigned his Sunday school class. Job resigned his bus route. Job quit what he'd been doing for God. Quit his soul winning. And Job now is in the ash heap. Mind is filled with memories. Job says, it hasn't always been this way. I've seen better days than this. Job begins to dream, as any old man would dream. Any man who's seen better days would dream. Job pictures himself. Are you listening? He pictures himself walking down the streets of the city. He sees the little children scurrying off to the side because Judge Job is coming through. Judge Job is coming by. Judge Job is walking down the street. Move over, here comes Judge Job. Shh, said the young man. Hand, said the old man. The judge is walking by. Sits in the ash heap of the city dump and scrapes himself and scratches himself with a piece of metal trying to alleviate his pain of elephantiasis. His wife has left him and his children are dead and his riches are all gone. And Job says, hi. I recall when it is the judge on the throne. Come to me and the poor people could find help. The blind would find eyes and the deaf would find ears. How did Job get back? How did Job come back to God? How did Job get back? I mean, in fellowship with God. Follow me. He became, he who was the best Christian on earth, became, listen, became the poorest Christian on earth. In his own life. So if you ever get back from a backslidden condition, you will have to get to the place where not your neighbor is the poorest Christian, but you are the poorest Christian. God looked at Job and said, Job, you think you're so hot? How many times did you cause the sun to rise in the morning? Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Huh? How many dinosaurs did you make, Job? How many times did you make it to rain? Have you considered the snow? How many snowstorms did you send on earth? How many crops did you fertilize, big boy? You think you're so hot? Where were you, Job? Job got down in the ashes and he said, I abhorred myself. I abhorred myself. And Job said, oh my God, 'tis not my brother. 'Tis not Eliphaz. 'Tis not Bildad. 'Tis not Zophar. It's me. Job. I, who thought I was a good Christian. I'm the worst. I'm on the bottom. I'm a wretched man. I hate myself. And Job threw himself in the ashes and said, oh God, I hate myself. You know that a broken and contrite heart, God never despises. He never does. God looked down and saw that broken and contrite heart, and I want to tell you a picture now. This is no dream. Comes a fellow down the street. Yeah. And Job comes back down the street again. And the little children say, here comes Judge Job. And Job says, boy, it sure is good to get back. Yeah. I recall now, and I was out in the ash heap. I thought I'd never get back here again. And all the aged men said, stand up! Judge Job is coming. And Job saw those men stand again, and he said, boy, oh boy. Job took his place on the bench again, and here came the cases. Job, I'm sure, filled his eyes with a few tears of joy. And said, wait a minute. There's a place that was better than that. He went to his prayer closet that night. God preserved him again. Job sang whatever they sang in the place of nothing between my soul. Job went off to bed and said, oh, it's good to be back. Did you know that it's bad to be in the darkness, but for one who's walked in bright light, the darkness is even darker? Did you know it's bad to be poor, but for one who has known great riches, poverty is even worse? One who had known the wealth of spiritual experience that Job had, find himself backslidden. Where are you tonight? I'm not asking you if you're the best Christian in your church. I'm asking you, are you what you used to be? I'm not asking you if you've grown the most spiritually. I'm asking you, are you what you used to be? I'm not asking you how close to God you've come. I'm asking you, are you as close to God as you used to be? I'm not asking where you are on the roster of good Christians in this church. I'm asking you, where are you according to where you used to be? I'm not asking you if you lead this church in soul winning. I'm asking you if you lead your past in soul winning. Are you what you used to be? Back to Bethel, I must go. Back where the rivers of pure waters flow. Back to the joy life my soul longs to know. Bethel is calling. Ask you one question in close. Are you listening? One question. This is it. Are you the best Christian? Or have you seen better days? If the answer is, I've seen better days, the way back is to get in the ash heap. Don't hate anybody. Don't criticize anybody but yourself. Isaiah saw the Lord and said, woe is me, not woe is my neighbor, not woe is my pastor, not woe is my church, not woe is the staff, not woe is the deacons, not woe is my neighbor, not woe is my teacher, but woe is me! Woe is me. Woe is me. Get in the dust. Abhor yourself. God looks down and says, I will not despise. How is it with you? And how is it with you? Have you seen better days? People come to me often and say, preacher, how can I get back? How can I get back? How can I get the joy I once knew? Forget the joy you once knew. It's the fellowship God once had with you, the thing you'll be concerned about.
Get your own joy. Think about God's joy. God misses you. God wants you. And you want Him. You need Him. For it is the joy. How is it with you? Are you less than what you once were? Then you are a backslider. Say, preacher, you're talking about me. No, I'm not talking about anybody. I'm talking about Jack Hiles first. And in case anybody here needs what I need, then I'm asking you to do what I need to do. What? To hate myself? Not you. Criticize myself? Not you. Call to the dust myself? Not kick you in the dust. Hopes that I abhor myself. How is it with you? How is it with you? I wonder how many would say, Brother Hiles, I like Job spiritually. All over the house. All over the house. I, like Job, have seen better days. Lower your hands. God bless you. That is the first and most important thing, and that's to admit it. That's to admit it. Now the second step. Get Bildad, Job. Job, forget Zophar and Eliphaz. Forget, Job, the fact that your wife said, curse God and die. It wasn't her fault, Job. Don't blame her. Job, forget those friends that forsook you. Job, look at Job.